Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fighting Words on the Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll has asked us to cut short our introduction tonight to pay tribute to a family friend of over 50 years, who has developed some major problems. So we're going to dedicate tonight's program to a man who is a man among men, a guy who makes the word pastor believable, Father Bill Lawler, a family friend of over 50 years. His service to his friends and his parishioners has just unending, 24/7, 365. Bill was unfortunately diagnosed this week with ALS. And looking at it the way he has always looked at life, first he talked about it's what happened and everything. He said the only problem he is upset about with this whole thing is that Lou Gehrig was a Yankee, and he being a Phillies fan just doesn't fit right now. So, Bill, we send in our best thoughts to you, and we love you. So, well, guys, it's great to be back. Ty, how you doing?
Butch, it's just great to have you back. It's great to hear your voice. Just walked in the door, but absolutely wasn't going to miss the show. Just an opportunity to chat with you, sir, spend some time with you. The question is, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. We're 2 weeks post-op at this point with zero residual pain. The cardiologist I went in to see on Thursday, and he gave me a clean bill of health. An EKG, and things came up well. So I'm looking forward to, I was talking to Bob before we went on air, I'm looking forward to getting that release from the surgeon so that I can get out and do more than just walk up and down my driveway.
Well, you know what? Pray God you can walk up and down the driveway. We'll take that for right
now. That's right.
So
that's right.
Good stuff.
Yeah, don't push it, Frank.
That's right.
Sir, talk to
I'll
about
tell
it.
You. I had mine. When I had mine, I couldn't do anything. That guy put the mitral valve in wrong. I had to have it removed. I had a nightmare after my open heart, but I'm glad to see that you haven't had any problems at all. That's terrific. So,
I got a question for everybody. Maybe you want to start with this one, Bob. Demetrio Bivol says that he could beat Canelo Alvarez at any time. What's your thought about that one?
I don't know anything about that guy, but beating Canelo, we're talking boxing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I just watched that recently, that Canelo fight against Kovalev, and I'm totally impressed by that guy. He took out the bigger man. He stays in his shell. What really surprised me about that fight is you didn't see the knockout coming. A lot of times, you'll wear somebody down, you see him stagger a little bit, and it was just clean, crisp, out of nowhere, and boom, that guy did not get up. So I'm not in front of a computer, but I don't know of a better guy in boxing right now I mean, again, it all comes down to smack talking, so I'd like to see this guy at some point. So that would be a great fight. And Canelo's a pretty amazing dude.
He certainly is. What do you think, Zito?
that was a fun fight. I actually root for the little guy with the smaller reach against the taller guy because, I mean, that's an underdog, and to be honest, I didn't expect Canelo to win, and nobody that in my circle really did. I thought he would put up a better performance than was expected, meaning that I thought he would lose and put up a very good performance. Canelo went out there and laid a game plan down. And I seen early in the fight that it was a problem that the bigger guy could not take the smaller guy's shot the way the smaller guy could take the bigger guy's shot. And Ty and I always say, the harder puncher is the guy who could take the better shot. It doesn't matter historically or the guy who has more knockouts or anything. When you get in the ring with a specific guy and he can take your shot better than you could take your shot, those percentages go out the window. So, with that said, Kovalev had a problem getting the good shot on Canelo, and he looked nervous early. When he looked nervous early, I seen that was a problem. Against a guy like Canelo, Canelo is calm under all circumstances. He was getting totally outboxed by Floyd Mayweather, and he didn't really look frustrated. He didn't know what to do, but he didn't look like really rattled, frustrated, definitely not hurt. And I've seen Canelo fight heavier guys, so I mean, it gets down to the point to where he was just a better boxer than Kovalev and a better fighter. What that means, he had to take shots from Kovalev. He had to take shots.
Sure.
And he lost. I mean, he was coming back a little bit. He was in the fight, but he was losing the fight when he knocked Kovalev out. Didn't really see it coming like you normally do fights, to where, oh, the guy's wearing him down. The guy's, you know, he's busting him up. He's doing this and that. He was doing that anyway to a certain degree. When he was hitting Kovalev, you see Kovalev having much more of a reaction than when Kovalev hit Canelo, even when they both hit clean. So just to sum things up,
good.
I have
Ty?
To kind of give Canelo total credit.
Sure.
Total credit against a guy. I mean, against a guy who I didn't think he could beat.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he go up two weight classes too?
I thought the Kovalev performance was fantastic. But the question actually, or your statement actually, wasn't about Kovalev. It was about Dmitry Bivol, and Dmitry Bivol saying that he could beat Canelo every day of the week or beat him anytime, whatever. I think he has every right to say that. Whether it can happen or not, I don't know. But Dmitry Bivol has the style and the size to really cause Canelo problems. Stylistically, he could give Canelo fits. Specifically, he's the 175er. He's not the biggest. He's not as big and as imposing as Kovalev, but he has a very accurate punch on the fly style that's very mobile that gives a guy like Canelo problems. He also has the size and the power to make Canelo a little hesitant too, the way he was with Sergey Kovalev. The reason why Kovalev was able to control large swaths of that fight is because Canelo, who's economical anyway, had to more economical because he had to play defense because of the power and the size Sergey Kovalev wields. He would have to give Dmitry Bivol the same respect, except Dmitry Bivol is like 27. He's young, he's fresh, and so right now, I'm not saying that Bivol beats Canelo, but I definitely would say Canelo beats Bivol. I think right now, 50-50 fight. If I were to analyze it, I might lean slightly towards Bivol just based on his style. Bivol's trying to do is everyone knows that he's a very good fighter at that weight, but he hasn't been able to get a big fight, and he hasn't been able to excite fans either because of his style. But that same style, like a Demetrius Andre, these are the kind of styles that will give Canelo problems. So ideally, I don't see Canelo going anywhere near Bivol, to be honest with you.
See what Chris has. Chris, what do you think?
I'll have to agree. I'll have to agree there. I made a big mistake in picking Kovalev. I just could not. I can't get it out of my head. I can't get it out of my head that when I was growing up, we had Archie Moore, Edward Charles, Howard Johnson in the light heavyweight division, and middleweight couldn't touch him. And all of a sudden, this little guy who's not really, you know, he's not tall, he doesn't have the reach, he doesn't have anything, he knocks him out. That's just unbelievable to me.
I love
that. But I love it too because, you know, I'm a short, stocky guy myself.
Exactly.
But, you know, I mean, naturally, I'd rather root the shorter guy, you know, home. But Dibble, he's got the style to beat Kovalev because Canelo, because he'll move around that ring and outbox him. He's got the reach.
Uh-huh.
He's got youth. He's got everything. No reason why he could even be reached by Canelo. And if Canelo's smart or his manager's smart, they'll stay away from him because he can make him look bad. And I think that's not a good fight for him. Matter of fact, he should get out of the light heavyweights. They'll press his luck.
Right now, Better Beev, in my opinion, is probably he's the number one light heavyweight by rankings with his stoppage over Voschek. But the thing about
better BF too, Berterbi, of however you say it. The thing about Archer is that not only is he the hardest puncher in the division, but he also proved that he has good footwork, he can fight, and he has a deep tank too. That's the guy that could possibly wear Canelo out and maybe hurt him. You know, that's the guy that could do what Sergey couldn't do. But speaking on Bivol, though, like you say, Doc, like we say, Dr. Chris, styles make fights, and that's a style that's just not suitable to Canelo at that weight at all.
I agree.
Well, I didn't hear the initial question. I apologize. So as far as the – I didn't hear Bivol mentioned as far as Canelo's concerned. If you y'all don't mind me just responding. Canelo knew what he was dealing with Kovalev. One thing about this is this. Canelo is not a light heavyweight. He saw a light heavyweight that he could beat, and to be honest, he's not a light heavyweight. For him to continue, the only person I could honestly see him having an opportunity to beat is Berterbiev. He's the only person I could see. Why? Because he's the only person that's going to give Canelo those openings like that. Even Voschek. The nail's not going to give Canelo with those things. One thing is, Canelo knew, if I get to Kovalev, if I can get to him, and I can get to him because I'm fast, I have good hand speed, and I'm a pretty good counterpuncher, and I can lead pretty good to get this guy. Kovalev, I saw a little faded version of Kovalev to me. He was giving up his range a little easy to Canelo, to the point to where at times Canelo didn't have to move his feet to really touch him like that. With that said, that had a lot to do with Canelo's defense. That's not going to work against the Bivol. It's not going to work against the Voschek. These guys, first of all, Kovalev, his discipline does lay in his power. If his power is not making a difference, or is not getting there, then things really, really begin to unravel. Bivol, these guys work things in. They don't initially need that. They don't initially need to set anything. Kovalev is a front runner, to be honest. If it's not going well, then Kovalev, I mean, he has no plan B. I've seen Kovalev get out fought in two fights against the same guy, two fights. He also kind of sort of got out fought in the fight against Alvarez to a point. Kovalev was landing on, but Alvarez kind of stuck in there and started getting back into the fight before he knocked Kovalev out. It wasn't like he just came out of nowhere. He was working his way into knocking Kovalev out. So Kovalev, I mean, as far as thought processes and plan Bs in the fight, Kovalev is not the guy to do that. So, I mean, now you're dealing with guys whose plan A's are their plan B's, guys who can rely on more than one thing, and guys who, to be honest, I think do have a tougher shell than Kovalev. Voschek, Berterbiev, and Bivol. These guys, you're talking about the cream of the crop up there. Kovalev was fading. He was fading. So, I mean, if you put him up against any of those three guys, I probably wouldn't have picked him before the Canelo fight. So, now you're talking – no, Canelo, he's not going to stay at one. I don't see him staying at 175. Because to do that, you're going to have to face one of those three. So, that's my point.
Hey, Bob, on the UFC 244 last Saturday, your buddy Jorge Masvidal beat Nate Diaz, but ended up with a 90-day medical suspension due to cuts over his eyebrow. What do you think of that?
Man, they both lived up to the name of the title.
Yes, they did.
The thing is, before the fight, you know, everyone was doing their betting and stuff, and I pretty much called it. Diaz doesn't get warmed up. You know, he usually, you know, you beat on him for a round or two before he really gets into it. Problem is, he's got so much dang scar tissue anymore. You know, you're going to get that cut on him. And so, I mean, I pretty much called it to be stopped on a cut by the fourth, and I think it just made the end of the third or something. Because, you know, Masvidal is such a BMF, you know what I mean? They were going to go out and straight cut it out, and that's what they did. It just, you know, Diaz's face can't hold up to that much punishment. I think then booking that on the same night as the Kovalev fight was interesting, or I don't know, a dick move. I don't know either way, but it was crazy that, you know, Kovalev and those guys had to wait like 30 minutes. Like, I couldn't imagine.
For real?
They're just hanging out, cooling down, waiting for the BMF title. But yeah, Masvidal, man, that was. He did great, man. It was a great, great fight. They lived up to the hype. It was worth every penny, a bit of submission there, or admission, if you ask me. Yeah, I loved it.
So, Bob, I have a question for you. Who do you think that right now, Jorge, I mean, who's next for Jorge? Because he's right now he's trying to prove he's the best as far as I want to say lightweight, welterweight, you know.
Right. They're right. The thing is, that wasn't even like a unified title for anything.
No,
so
it wasn't.
That wasn't. I don't even know if their weight was even close. You know, competition wise, they just created the BMF for those two specifically. Now, what they do with that now, or I mean, they've set up a two, a three, you know, I mean, they're definitely going to redo it. Nate's going to come back and train, and, you know, of course, you get the 90-day suspension for the cut. That's pretty typical. I think it's, you know, knockouts or whatever. You get indefinite suspension until they, you know, they give doctor approval and let you back in after, you know, a couple of months. But a cut takes a while for it to heal. I mean, it's just going to keep reopening, and everyone knows that when they go up against Diaz. Next for Masvidal, I mean, wait for the money. You know, I mean, I'd wait for the second round with Nate Diaz, let him heal up, do it again in a year, 6 months, 8 months. And then if he's got another opportunity in front of him, then yeah. You know, it just, you know, he did a great job against Ben Askren, you know, we went over that. That's what led to this fight. You know, his next shot, I mean, he could be going after, brain fart right now. The wrestler or whatever, but I would follow the money trail. That's why you're in it, you know?
Well, Bob, I have another question. If you don't mind, Bob, I have another question for you. You brought up Ben Askren. And I don't know if you're I don't think I've been on, but how did you like the Ben Askren Damian Maia fight? What do you think about that?
I did not see that one. But didn't Maia beat him up? I mean, Maia's a black dog. Who won that?
You don't know who won?
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Well, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to suggest that you go on YouTube, and if you cannot find the winner of the fight, watch it so you don't know the winner. If you want to know, I could tell you.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm not in front of a computer right now. I'm over at a buddy's house, but I'll definitely look it up.
All right, look that fight up.
But going forward, I think, Ben Askren, he was a tough wrestler guy.
I like Ben. I like Ben. He has heart. I have to see how his learning curve is. Because if you don't have a good learning curve, I mean, it depends your age sometimes. But I've seen age, especially in UFC, kind of adapt.
Right.
But if you don't have a good learning curve, then if you're going to be who you are consistently, you need to get better, extremely specialized in exactly who you are to nullify what everybody else is doing, or else you need to diversify.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why they call it mixed martial arts. I mean, back in the day, when it all first started, the Gracies came out, everyone had a moniker. You know, I was jiu-jitsu.
Everybody
I was
had a specialty. Yes, sir.
You know, and then it's evolved now, you know, to where you have to be cross-training. And then the only people that, just like after, you know, that wave of wrestlers in the very beginning, you know, Mark Coleman, Dan Severn, all those guys, the wrestlers came in. Were able to dominate because they've got such a good top game. Then the sport evolved, you know, and then Maurice Smith ended up kicking, Mark Coleman. You're right, yeah. And then it really evolved, and the people were like, oh, striking has a spot as well. So it wasn't just jiu, it wasn't just wrestling, it wasn't just striking, it was a true mixed martial arts. And then as it developed over the years, everyone's got to be cross-trained. You know, it's like we were talking earlier about that, you know, Kovalev and Canelo. Now, Canelo, I agree. I can't remember who said it, but someone said that, you know, Canelo looked up the ranks and saw Kovalev, and he's like, oh, I have a style that could probably beat that guy. And then that's why he did that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But right. He's not gonna be able to fare against all these other you know, guys in that division. But again, in any fight, you want to do what you're good at. You know, you want to lead that game. You know, if I'm good in close, I want to be in close. If I'm good from far away, I want to be far away. Good on the ground, good thing, whatever it is. And so Askren's a tough kid, but he's definitely got to develop. And he came in as a phenomenal wrestler, did a really great job, but then just kind of got that real big head, like, oh, I can't be beat. But again, he's not a true mixed martial artist. He's just a bad wrestler, you know? We definitely got to see how he comes out of his next camp. He needs to really be getting him. You know, you bring up Ronda Rousey in that, too. Like, all the girls, there were so many girls that had a chance to beat her, but she was a phenomenal judo person. And everyone kept trying to beat her way. Well, she's the best at it. And then the first person that went out there and fought their own fight, knocked her out, you know?
Ronda, and what I'm going to say about Ronda was so much stronger than most of the people she fought. Most of the people that Ronda fought prehand to Holly Holmes, they were moving up. They were smaller, and that's kind of how the female, unfortunately, the female division was in the UFC.
Right.
They kind of built Ronda up with smaller people. To an extent, I'm going to be honest. Holly Holmes, she messed up size wise. Everyone after Holly Holmes, everybody's kind of, they either messed up size wise or almost looked bigger than Ronda. Misha Tate was smaller. Oh my God. What's the other? Oh, it was like, but they all kind of look smaller.
Yeah, well, she did go against Zagano was out of Colorado. I know her, and Kat had everything,
the tools. Zagano.
Yeah, she had all the tools to beat Rousey, but she, again, went out and tried to fight Rousey's style and lost. And she was.
But you also remember, though, Kat Zagano lost her husband, like, shortly before, like, when she signed into UFC.
Within,
and
like, 6-8 months.
Lot.
I mean,
also,
we're
all
there.
Real quick, just to give you. Just to give you guys some context on your discussion, the BMF title was held at welterweight. Both guys are welterweight. They both weighed in at welterweight. What's next for Jorge Masvidal? Nate Diaz called for a rematch. Dana White is not necessarily interested in booking the rematch. Obviously, it was a good fight, but it was pretty one-sided. So what's happened since then is Nick Diaz has called Jorge Masvidal out. Jorge Masvidal is obviously interested in that. But what is very likely to happen is because Jorge Masvidal is now on a 3-fight winning streak, Darren Till, Ben Askren, and now Nate Diaz, and he's hot, he's popular, he could very well be in line for the winner of the championship match between Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman. And if not that, then there's a very good chance he could end up fighting the guy he hasn't been trying to fight. Just because there's no money in it, and that's Leon Edwards. You guys remember Leon Edwards is on like an 8-fight winning streak in the welterweight division. He's the guy that that Jorge Masvidal gave the 3-piece and a soda to. He said when he punched him backstage. So initially they thought that fight was going to be made, but obviously the Askren fight got made, and that kind of jettisoned Jorge Masvidal into another stratosphere of popularity. So Leon Edwards, who has been very efficient in his winning, is not very exciting, but he is right up there for a championship shot. So those are the options for Mr. Masvidal. Perfect.
Good. Good. Hey, Todd, let me ask you a question getting back to boxing. Jorge Linares claims he's ready for Ryan Garcia. Is that a go or not?
No, it's not a go. First of all, Ryan Garcia is, he's still a young kid. You know, he still has some growing to do as far as a fighter. Jorge Linares is still rebuilding because he just recently got knocked out, just came back, had a comeback win. So that's just not a fight Golden Boy would be looking to make anytime soon. I think if they get Ryan Garcia to a point, they were very impressed with his win over Romer Aldunao, who's a fringe contender, but, you know, he's not Jorge Linares' level. And so I think they would build Ryan Garcia before they send the Jorge Linares scalp his way. I don't think they do that just yet. So I don't see that fight happening anytime soon. I could see Jorge Linares or Ryan Garcia. I could see either one beating the drums for that fight. But the fact of the matter is Ryan Garcia right now is at 130, and Jorge Linares is up 140. So there's a lot of weight between them two. So that's just not a fight that's going to happen anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, Chris, here's one for you. I know you love this one. You used to call him the little fat Mexican. We got
wow.
Ortiz. That's lost.
Yeah, wow. Right?
Wow.
The only one saying wow anymore. Thank you, Bob.
I'm sorry, but I thought it wow.
I'm getting mixed up on who the fat guy is. The names all sound alike. Ortiz, Ruiz. Oh, I know
they're all fat.
They're all fat.
Ortiz is in superb shape. Ty showed me the picture. Ortiz is not Ruiz.
Yeah. I got mixed up last time. The Cuban, when he told me he was losing weight, I thought he was talking about the Mexican, you know?
Oh.
And I got
they're
mixed up.
They're both losing weight. They both are losing weight.
The one guy,
guys look good.
Yeah.
Ruiz looks very slim, and so does Luis Ortiz for his fight against Wilder. So both guys are looking.
Yeah, well, the guy fighting Wilder,
he
needed to lose 20 pounds.
And I think one is better for one than the other. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The other guy's the Ruiz. Now wait a minute. The Cuban, he has to lose weight. He lost to Wilder because he ran out of gas. I think if he came in 20 pounds lighter, he would do better. But I don't think the fat
think
guy would do any
five
better.
Pounds, five years younger to do better.
Yeah, losing
5
pounds. But I'm all for the fat guy, the condition guy. I like to see him win because you know that'll make more people happy. More fat out of condition guys or anything else.
Wow.
That'll make more American happy then. That's what you're really saying.
Let the fat guy win. So, anyway, isn't the Mexican going to fight the Englishman next?
Rematch.
Yeah, that's going to be a hell of a fight. I got to see both of them. My TV, I don't have a hookup with the computer in a way. I can't get pay per view on my TV. So
Ruiz and Joshua have both leaned up ahead of their rematch. Luis Ortiz, who you're right, he's gassed. Honestly, Dr. Chris, I don't think it was that he needed to be 20 pounds lighter. I think he needed to be about 5 years younger. And
he's a lot older than
he won't be able to lose years. No matter how much weight he loses, he won't be able to lose years. And I think
that's
the biggest problem with him, honestly. And I really like the guy. I think he's a very talented fighter, but, you know, he was in Cuba defected late. And so, you know, he had a failed a drug test that put him out for like a year. So he's just, you know, he's like 39
no matter what
now,
you do.
I, yeah.
He was like Sonny Liston. Nobody knew how old Liston was, but he had 24 brothers and sisters, and they had him listed at when he fought Ali, like 32. He was way older than that, you know. And it showed when he got his rear end kicked, you know, when Ali kicked his butt.
Yeah.
But
you know,
I think you're right about the Cuban.
I was saying, Dr. Chris, a lot, and you would know this, a lot of writers that I read who are a little older, they swear up and down that if you'd have seen Sonny Liston, like in the 50s, before he was champion, they said that's when he was really a terror. And that's why Patterson avoided him for so long, or D'Amato had Patterson avoid him. I heard we really never saw the best of that guy. I heard he was really killer during the 50s.
I read a lot about that, and I read a lot of people saying that. They said, incredible people saying that Sonny Liston was like Joe, like when people talking about Joe Louis, his legacy. They say Sonny Liston's legacy would have been almost damn near the same if they would have gave him a shot. So, because Sonny Liston was boxing for a long time.
He was a nasty person, a mean guy, and he scared a lot of people. But he was big for a heavyweight, for that age group he was in. That era, the heavyweights, 210 was big for a heavyweight. He only weighed 185 pounds. I stood next to him at a news conference, and
he was a cruiserweight.
Stripped down. He looked like a light heavyweight top.
Light heavyweight.
And,
Liston,
they had to make the gloves for Liston's fists. They had to make him custom made because his hands were so damn big. You know,
Todd.
He was a big guy all around for a guy his height. And he was, Patterson was a small little guy. And he didn't have much of a punch. I won a lot
he
of money
quick.
On that fight. Yeah, fast,
Patterson was
all.
Quick and could get in. Yeah.
Fast. He was fast, but he couldn't, he didn't have a good chin.
Dr. Chris, you mentioned something really unique. You said, you know, Sonny Liston was a big guy for his height. And that's the one thing that history has shown, that Sonny Liston was, you know, 6'2". You know, he's about my height. But his dimensions were that of like a 6'9" guy. You know, like the only guy in heavyweight history, I think, who got his reach was longer than the Klitschko's.
That was it.
He's a guy who was, you know, he was – Big shoulders and big fist. He just had the dimensions of a bigger than 6'2", 200 and some odd pound guy. So
he had huge hands.
You know.
Great big hands. Yeah, a standard glove wouldn't fit on his hand, you know.
Sonny was a broad-shouldered guy. Like, his shoulders was his arm reach, to be honest. I mean, you see a guy with long arms and – like Deontay Wilder has long arms, but his shoulders are thin. And most of the time,
small.
You see guys with long arms,
their shoulders
don't compensate.
Deontay's got broad shoulders too, but not like Sonny's, whose shoulders are broad and dense. And he had long arms, so not only did he have these
big, broad shoulders,
he had these long arms too.
He had long arms. And a guy also in the heavyweight division who had deceptively long reach. And
one of the best
people
jabs
could
in
say
history.
About it was in boxing history, guy who had deceptively long reach, and people say it, but they don't think about it like that. It's George Foreman. George Foreman had an 80. He had a longer reach than Ali. Ali, I think, had an 81. George Foreman had an 82 on long arm reach. Sonny Liston had like an 84 arm reach.
Yeah, his arm reach was the same as Bones Jones.
His arm reach is
longer than Gustafson. I mean, these guys are.
I mean,
their arm reach is longer than guys 6'9".
Exactly. Ali at 6 foot, what was he, 3'4"?
Yeah.
6 foot three two. He had an 81. That's really long arm reach.
That's long arm.
Larry Holmes was 6 foot three and had a 77-inch arm reach.
Was it 77? I thought, yeah.
Yeah, 77-inch arm reach.
Yeah, that's
that is pretty good there. That's pretty good for a 6'3" guy, to be honest. I mean, maybe a little above average, but still. So now you're dealing with Ali, 6'3", 81-inch arm reach. George Foreman, 6'3", 6'4", 82-inch arm reach. Tyson Fury has a what? 84-inch arm reach, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think like his arm reach is the same as Sonny Liston's, or like a half an inch longer or half an inch shorter.
It's shorter.
Sonny Liston's arms
it's shorter.
Just as long as Tyson Fury. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, Tyson Fury's arms are shorter than Sonny Liston. This dude's 6'9". Sonny Liston's 6'1". If that, maybe 6 foot, 6 foot and a half, 6'1". Yeah, when he couldn't reach Ali. And I've seen them arms extend. I mean, even in the footage, you're like, yo, it has to be speed. I mean, it has to be speed. Yo, the guy, you can see his arm reach on a body jab. I've seen little older snippets of older footage of Sonny, but Lord have mercy. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sonny was. I've seen both fights with Sonny and Floyd. Wow.
The only guy that used to be able to give Sonny a battle was a friend of mine. His name was Jimmy McCarter. He played fullback at Washington State, and he weighed 225. And he come in the gym and pushed Sonny Liston all around.
That's heavy,
with 16-ounce gloves and a sparring glove, you know. Mm. And he'd make a fool out of Liston. And then they wanted him to spar with Slim Jim Robinson, who weighed 165. So after Jimmy knocked the hell out of Liston, they put the gloves on with Slim Jim. Didn't Slim Jim knock him out in the gym? I saw it with my own eyes at 165.
Liston?
No, he knocked out Jimmy McCarter.
Oh, Lord.
And Jimmy said, "I'll fight Liston for nothing." And because, you know, he was a rough guy. He played football. He played fullback. Mm. And he had big legs.
Yeah.
He used to get under Liston, push him around, and stay on top of him. Well, nobody else could do that but him. Liston didn't like fighting backing up. He couldn't fight that way. He had to he was not a backup fighter. And Jimmy kicked the hell out of him. But the police used to arrest him every week, but they stopped getting out of the car. They just said, "Drive home. We're not even going to arrest you. Just drive the damn car home," because he'd fight 10 of them at a time. He was nuts.
And
In Philly. Yeah.
Yeah,
they were, oh, well, they couldn't. They grabbed him. Christ, he'd kill him. They said, "We're not fighting you tonight. You know, you're drunk. Go home. We'll follow you. One guy in the front, one guy in the back." He was a character. But he... if somebody could bull him around and push him backwards, they could beat him. But there was nobody else could do that in the heavyweights when Liston was around, because they were all lighter. You know, you had Patterson at 182, 185. You know, you had that guy in England. You had really some poor heavyweights were around then. But the Liston was a big man. If you saw his fist, when he made a fist, he looked like a pie plate, you know? His hands were huge. He was big. No, big hands. Jesus Christ. So anyway.
Dr. Chris, I'm going to actually give you a mythical matchup, because you brought some good points up. How would Sonny Liston do against a prime Mike Tyson? Prime Sonny Liston against a prime Mike Tyson. How do you think that'll go?
Mike Tyson was more his size. And that would have been one hell of a fight, because Liston had one hell of a short left hook. He didn't get credit for that left hook that he had. And he would have been able to attack Tyson. I would love to have seen that fight. That would have been one of the great sellouts of all time if Tyson could have fought Liston. That would have, that certainly would have been the badass title of the century. I mean, you know, the meanest guy of the century, because both of them were tough and mean. But I, you know what? I thought of that the other night. It's funny you were saying that. I would, if in his prime, when Liston was a few years younger, I'd actually pick him against Tyson. That's how powerful he was. But Tyson was no slouch either. You know, I don't know. It would have been a hell of a fight to see. I don't know that Tyson could have backed him up, because he had the
Tyson
jabbing,
was,
you know.
Yeah. Tyson was,
you know, I don't
faster.
Think.
Tyson
yeah,
was
he could, he
faster.
Could.
And I think Sonny was a little bit more defensively aware. Because even when Tyson was, I watched him slip bobbing and weaving through the Customato thing. Even in Tyson's, the best of his prime, Tyson would give up shots. Tyson would give up wide open shots because he opened up so much with that left hook. And I watched Tyson, when he opened up, he was fast, but he would open all, like he'd throw short left hooks when he was only kind of on the inside. When he was on the inside and it was established that they were going to be on the inside, he'd throw a nice short left hook. On the outside, trying to work his way in, Tyson, he opened up a little too much, too wild at times. I seen kind of average boxers hit him with some things that they really were scared to, but the openings were there and he touched them, but they couldn't really do anything because they were scared. Even with those openings, again, Sonny was not scared. And one thing I know is this much. Both were kind of bullies. Both were kind of bullies, but one thing is Sonny was a proven bully. Sonny was proven to get in hard fights. Tyson wasn't a hard fight and win guy, to be honest. What fight have we seen Tyson have to go ahead and battle and go through hard back and forth stuff and him come out on top? Razor Ruddock? No. But then when you talk about that, that's the only fight that people could come up with. So as far as the Tyson legacy, as far as that goes, Sonny Liston had a couple battles. I watched something on film. I forget the exact people's names, but I watched Sonny have to get up from a knockdown in one fight.
One of the fights Sonny lost before he fought Floyd Patterson, he got his jaw broken in the fight. He fought the whole fight with the broken jaw. So
I remember
that. I don't know if he was knocked down, but I do know he got his jaw broken in that fight.
I remember Sonny was knocked down one time. I just remember reading about it. Sonny may have been knocked down one time. He got up to win the fight. Now, whether however it happened, like Marvin Hagler, I mean, he was knocked down.
Who knocked him down? I never saw it.
I've heard about it. I've never saw it myself. I'm sorry. I never saw him knocked down, ever.
Sonny wasn't losing it.
One thing about, and the little bit of footage I've seen about Sonny was aggressive, but Sonny did not mind staying behind that reach at times. He'll stay behind that reach, and Sonny liked to fight on the inside. He'll stay behind that reach on that jab until he wanted to get those good shots off. Kind of like Drew.
He had a heavy jab. He used to throw a power jab. He would step in with a jam his foot into the floor, and then power jab you, almost knock you down with a jab. You'd almost knock you down with a damn jab.
But he could fake that real good, because I've seen him a few times step real hard and not throw that jab. I've seen him feint it real good.
Yeah, he could feint. Well, he would feint. Yeah, he could do that too. But when he threw
that jab,
it was heavy. Yeah, well, the fights we'll never have a chance to see, but I would love to have seen him. You know? As far as Joe Lewis goes.
Not highlights, whole fight.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe Lewis was a different type fighter than Liston. different type altogether.
More
you
measured.
Know? Different attitude. Different mental attitude in the ring. Different mental attitude. Sonny was just nasty. He was nasty. Mm. He was nasty all the time. He was nasty. I mean, geez. And big as he was, he had to carry a gun all. He had to carry a gun all the time. Would you believe that? Who the hell would bother him? You know,
as a boxer,
carry a gun
in
a glove compartment.
That's it.
You know.
Let me ask you about another fight that could happen that we probably won't see. But Jorge Masvidal says that he wants to fight Canelo Alvarez, and that he'd beat his face in. What do you think on that one?
All right. Boxing or again?
Yeah, said box.
Canelo
Alvarez.
Oh, come on.
No. But I mean, I like Masvidal. He's doing the right thing. He's talking smack. He's trying to do it to Conor McGregor. I mean, if he can get there's all these UFC guys want to earn the right to challenge a boxer and go get paid. I mean, that's just it. I think it won't happen. It's just a money thing, but you know, Masvidal's going to keep talking. He's on that three. Win fight streak. He's doing well. He's beating some tough guys. His mouth running until he gets paid. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I would, if it happened, I would definitely tune in. You know,
sure.
Just to see how it came, you know, unfolded. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Z, what's your thoughts? Zito.
You want me to be totally honest? Totally honest.
Sure.
Okay. Bob, can you do me a favor? Can you please not get offended by my next comments?
No, absolutely not.
I love UFC. I watch it. I'm in tune with it. When it's not the boxing guys calling the UFC guys out to do UFC fights.
Right.
It's the UFC guys calling boxers out to do boxing fights. The money's in boxing still. So as much as and Dana White, because UFC right now is the major MMA employer. So we have to go there. Dana White right now, he has a problem on his hands. To be honest, I mean, he might figure that he might try to cash in every now and again, but this is not something that he wants. Definitely. He doesn't want his major stars calling out to do another sport, another competition. I don't want to call boxing a sport or MMA a sport, another competition. He doesn't want that. That is counter to anybody's business model. So, now, as far as the actual matchup, they need to do cross matches. If you're going to call a guy out from one competition to another, they need to set a guideline for a cross match. If you really want to do it, get a guy in a cross match. When you get a guy in a cross match, maybe you're going to convince a guy, I'm a good boxer, but here's the problem. They're calling the money guys out. So, the money guys aren't going to go beyond what they do.
No.
To be honest, maybe you need to call a guy out who's kind of up there, who's kind of maybe drawing a little. Call Adrian Broner out to do that right now. While he's still boxing, making a bit of money, Let one of those guys call Adrian Broner out. Let Frankie Edgar call Adrian Broner out. That's what I'm talking about. And let them do a cross match. Two guys that have sort of a name in both of their sports. If you want to actually start this, let them do a cross match to where it's, not the bare knuckle boxing, but let a little grappling go, some tripping and sweeping, If you get inside and you go ahead and, something, let some cross-match stuff go. But when you start calling I do one thing, and then now I want to do another thing against the highest level of this. That's stupid to me. That's like saying, who's the highest, who's the best soccer player? Let him go ahead up against LeBron. You know what I mean? Let LeBron go ahead and say, you know what, I'm going to put some cleats on and go up against, you know, the best soccer player. They're both going to look equally, it's both going to be equally stupid to me. So why would somebody do something like that? Money, yeah. But realistically, I mean, the owner of your company is, after the Connor thing, because he cashed in on the Connor thing, he's going to be real hesitant to do that now. Because what? I mean, you have to have your name as big as Connor, and you have to draw a name as big as Floyd. Two things that's probably not going to happen in recent times. Enough said to me.
None of that was offensive. I was waiting for something good.
Did you get it? At the beginning, I didn't want to say boxing was a bigger, but at the moment, that's just kind of what it is. I'm sorry.
No, it's a fact. I mean, boxing's on top. My only thing is I don't have my computer in front of me, but there's a boxer guy I just read about, he's talking about once he's done with his three-fight contract, he wants to go to the UFC and fight over there. And I don't know. I can't remember his name. But, like, I don't understand the logic behind that. Why would you want to go risk taking a beating for money, you know? The problem with the UFC is the UFC. You know, it's the management.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the fighters deserve to get paid more than they're getting paid. Management's got, you know, structured, so they're just cleaning the house, and they're all, you know, lining their pockets. At some point, there's got to be some sort of break. I mean, I hope and pray, you know, that, you know, Bellator or FC1 or one of these other things actually surpass the UFC, because they're paying more, they're paying better, but they're not as successful as the UFC. So that's the problem, is the UFC is kind of, you know, they've made such a name for themselves. Again, like I couldn't believe that they had Canelo and Kovalev wait for the UFC
that
finish. I mean, that blew me away. You know what I mean? So, but.
So, just with the Canelo and Kovalev waiting, that was a decision made by the executives at the Zone. Golden Boy would have never made that decision. Bob Arum would have never made that decision. They don't respect MMA enough to do so. The Zone, because they're trying to build subscriptions.
They promote.
They're not promoting. They're just trying to build subscriptions. They want subscriptions. So they specifically went ahead, you know, I read the article. They specifically went ahead and said, hey, we thought this would be the best way to lure in more subscriptions as far as that goes. As far as Masvidal calling Canelo out, I think a full discussion on that is just, it's ludicrous. What it comes down to is Canelo Alvarez is the number one draw in combat sports in the world today, by
there
far. So yes, you're going to call the money guy out, but that's all it is. You know what I mean? So.
Same thing with Floyd and Connor.
You know, Chris, I got another one for you. Danny Jacobs has a fight coming up with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. next month. Who do you think is going to be the winner on that one?
Well, first of all, I'm tired of seeing Chavez recycled. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know what the hell you're getting. You don't know if he's going to come in shape, overweight. You don't know what the hell he's going to. You know, I wish the guy would retire and get the hell out of boxing and do it a favor. Mm-hmm. But you know, Danny Jacobs is a tough guy to fight. He's a great boxer,
great.
Good puncher, good fighter all around. If they come in even weight, you got to pick him over Chavez. You got to pick him.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I just wish that guy would retire, because all he is a screw off. You don't know, one week he's 200, the next week he wants to fight at 165. Man, you know, he's just mind-boggling, that guy. If I were a promoter, I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't trust him. I would never sign him as a promoter. And I had to laugh when you said that one guy from the MMA wanted to quit when he quits. When a guy quits boxing, he wants to fight in the MMA. I knew that guy's middle name, Stupid. You know? Because why? He'd get his ass kicked if he fought even up. You got to remember, the feet are deadly. That guy will kick his brains out. So any of those guys. They could never. And then once they got on the floor, they're done. They twist his arm around his head. You know. By the way, what did you think of that fight we had the other night with the Steelers game? Who'd you pick in that one?
Right inside his heart.
I laughed for half an hour.
I'm gonna listen to y'all. Do you want me? But
I thought it was. My wife said, "You think that's funny?" I think it's a riot. I got a big kick out of Big Ponzi.
You know why I thought it was a riot? You know why I thought it was a riot, Dr. Chris? Because one thing I'm taught in life, when you start it, I mean, and I understand, I mean, I seen the tackle, and I understand. But if you're going at somebody's head and they more successful, then you don't run up on them without your equipment.
Yeah,
that's all
drama.
I'm gonna say, and I'm not gonna say that that he was right for hitting him in his head. He wasn't right. I mean, God darn, that just was
he yanked his helmet off.
And the thing is, he hit an unarmed head with an armed hand. So I mean, when it comes to that, you kind of. But I mean, my thing is this. You don't run up on that. You don't run up on. I mean, we're boxers. If something, you know, you don't run up on a wide open to get hit wide open. You should know about that. I mean, as a football player, you're a quarterback. Do you run to get hit wide open? Nobody. I mean, instinct, even on the field, your instinct is not to run into a wide open hit. If you can, players get down. Players catch the ball, get down, because people come in full body. You're coming at a grown man that has your helmet in their head without your helmet, who's not really as restrained as you think. And, to me, that wasn't a wise decision. Now, it was, you know, wasn't the best decision to hit him in his head. But it wasn't a wise decision to put yourself in that position.
Yeah,
sure,
right.
Sorry.
I got a kick out of the center, Ponzi. He picked up for a quarterback.
God, he went off.
And he hit the guy about five times in the face. All he did was hurt his hand, so he kicked him.
Oh.
He got on. He
hurt his foot.
He said, "The hell, it hurt my hand. I'm going to kick him now to see what I." I just thought it was comical. You know, the way they. I know my grandson, he has a football helmet on. It's got an iron bar across the front.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it would crush your hand if you hit him in the face with that iron bar. And I could just imagine when Ponzi was hitting that guy in the face, and he had the mask on. He had the helmet on.
It had no effect.
You know?
No effect.
That wasn't too bright either, him and that other guy. But the whole thing was amusing. It was very amusing. Nobody got hurt. What the hell?
Nobody got hurt.
Nobody got hurt.
Everybody put themselves in position to get hurt. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
They put themselves in position to get hurt, and nobody got hurt.
Yeah. It was. I got a kick out of the whole thing, but you're right. Nobody got hurt. And then he got to live in hell, find out of them. Oh, my God, did they get fined?
Oh,
it's going to cost them a small fortune. You know,
yeah.
You miss all those games, no pay.
Yeah,
you know,
he's banned without pay through the rest of this year and possibly all of next year.
That's terrible.
I thought it'd be a few games. They said, but I knew this year was done.
Yeah, they were
saying
it's
I didn't hear anybody.
It's possible. Yeah.
I don't think they'll ban him for next year. That's not fair.
He's going to get at least four games.
Yeah, four games. That's enough. That's
enough.
He's going
to get at least four games. Or they might get them half. I don't know. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Four games.
Guys,
right?
we're right up against
the
time.
We should do more boxing.
So, Chris, thank you for coming on, and you always bring
a
lot of
my pleasure.
Light side to the program, and especially with your historical background with the boxing. Bob, we'd love it when you're on here and help us out with the MMA. Ty and Zito, you guys are just the tops when it comes to boxing, and I really appreciate all that you do for the show. Just so everybody will know, Doghouse Boxing is coming back. It has been out for about 2 years, but I got a call from our good friend Benny Henderson, and they're going to revive the Doghouse Boxing. We may be part of their programming come very near future, so I'll let you guys know about that. But,
please. I have an article.
Yep.
Okay.
They want you to both you guys to write for them. So I will
get
them. As soon as I get all the information, I'll get it to you. So
okay.
Chris, have a great weekend. I hope everything works
you
out.
You too, Frank. Heal well. All right.
Thank you, sir.
I'll see you guys next week. All right.
Okay.
Take it easy. Bye now.
Take care, bud.
Okay. Take care, Bob. Have a good weekend. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
next
everybody.
Week. Same time, same place.
Sounds
take it easy,
take
Bob.
Okay.
Have a good one, Bob.
Do you want to lead us out?
So we'll do another nice show. Sorry I was on late. I want to thank you, Dr. Chris, Bob, Ty, all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob and Coach Mel. Anybody want to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Great. Ty?
Butch, first and foremost, is glad to hear your voice, and I'm happy that you're well and progressing in a steady rate. Keep it up, sir. You just don't do too
that's
much.
Right.
Bob is our co-pilot.
No,
Coach Mel's watching over us. Everyone, enjoy your weekend.
I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. It's always a pleasure to be with good friends and have a lot of fun. It's like sitting around a table just talking. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please take the time to shake their hand, wink, give them an eye wink, or anything you can do to let them know that you know they're there. These are very, very tough times for the men and women in police and fire uniforms, as well as those working domestically in our armed forces and in foreign lands. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in line of duty, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Cotton Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department. Patrolman Robert Germain, Wilmington, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Kahn at Tarpon Springs Police Department. Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Artith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department. FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio. Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard. Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter. Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Pasco County Deputy Sheriff Ava Rodriguez, and Officer Bob McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevorat fet hakuigem ma'ilma.
Bob, we love you and we miss you.